This is the InfoSmack Deep Dive Podcast. This show contains deep and explicit technical material and is not recommended for technical lightweights. You have been warned.
Welcome to this InfoSmack Deep Dive Podcast. The InfoSmack brand is growing, and this is the very first Deep Dive Podcast under the InfoSmack brand. We decided we wanted to do something potentially a little bit more technical than the regular weekly InfoSmack show. Not down in the mud, but maybe down in the weeds and with a little bit less banter. The mandate being for this show to be more technical content, kind of to have the show to be educational, light-hearted, I guess, in the true InfoSmack way, but still educational. Personally, I learn a shed load from blogs and podcasts. And personal preference of mine actually is the audio podcast. I think it works really well for me. You know, I can travel and consume and assimilate technical content at the same time. Potentially slightly dangerous while I'm driving my car, which is why we don't want to get down in the mud. We don't want to get too technical, people to focus too much and forget about driving. But we do want the technical content to be interesting. I'd like all of the listeners to go away from each show having learned at least something, and hopefully quite a bit. So interesting but educational, so no pressure, guys. On that note, and without further ado, let's meet tonight's motley crew. Co-hosting this show, and I'm honest here, one of my absolute favourite people from the industry, and this is not a butt-kissing show, right? But this guy's genuinely a gent and a technical meister, Mr. Rick Vanover.
Thanks, Nigel. Thanks. I appreciate that welcome. I swear I did not bribe him or otherwise endorse that type of introduction. Great to be here.
No, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, Rick. I really appreciate your time and your support. Now, joining Rick and I tonight, we've got two technical legends, and these guys were honestly both my first two choices when I thought up this show. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. And so as not to show any favouritism here, let me introduce our guests tonight alphabetically. First up, we've got Kevin Houston from BladesMadeSimple.com. Kevin, why don't you just take a minute or two to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Nigel. Well, I'm a blogger that focuses on blade servers, and so I try to keep my content on BladesMadeSimple.com focused only on blade servers, although sometimes I'll trickle over to the virtualization and storage sides, but I appreciate you having me on today.
It's a pleasure to have you. Last but not least, Mr. Bob Plankers, the lone sysadmin.
Well, thanks for having me on. I do system administration and virtualization blogging, kind of getting a little bit into networking lately, and I'm kind of a storage refugee, so I know enough about that sort of stuff to be dangerous. And yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm glad to talk about servers.
Oh, it's great stuff. Thanks for being on the show, Bob. Bob, you got married at the weekend, right? So huge congratulations there.
Thank you.
And it is, what is it, it's Tuesday now, so you're not long married and you're coming on the show, so I think that's pretty awesome.
3 days, yeah, we've, our honeymoon is in a couple of weeks due to my wife's, it's weird to say wife, her scheduling and all that stuff, so not a problem for being on here.
So tonight's show, we're talking about blade servers versus rack mount servers. We're going to dive into it, which we feel is better from a personal perspective. Got to ask you first, Bob, does your wife have a preference?
For rack servers versus blade servers? Probably not. Well, her preference is probably no servers whatsoever. They're loud and they consume a lot of power. And yeah, what are all those things in the basement in the corner? But so her preference is probably not at all. Beyond that, I don't think I could speak for her on this topic.
Cool. So do you have a preference personally?
Personally, I kind of like rack servers. I know blade servers have come a long way, and I know that I realize that in a lot of cases that they're very useful, but I think those use cases are pretty specific. Yeah, so I lean towards the rack side of things.
All right. Rick, do you have a preference, actually, before we get into it? I think it's pretty obvious, I'm guessing, that Kevin's leaning towards the blades.
It's probably
in the title of the website.
Yeah. I'm 78% pro rack server. I'd pick the number, but it's just like 3 out of 4 times, I definitely see rack the way to go.
Okay, so can I just ask you a question then, Rick? Do you think that's to do with the scale of deployment that you deploy on?
It's acquisition cost for me. You know, it's one of those things that I don't, even, you know, now my role is different, but historically I never found myself needing to deploy 10, 20, 14, you know, large numbers at a time. It was always, okay, let's start with 3, let's add 3 more, let's add 6 more, let's add 8 more. And that may span a number of years, and the life cycles of blades, coupled with not being space constrained, historically put me back to the, you know, the rack is the best way for acquisition cost reasons.
Not just the blades themselves, but also the life cycles of the chassis too, you know.
How is that different, you know, the life cycle of a rack mount chassis than a blade?
Well, I guess I'm agreeing with you. The life cycle of the chassis itself is not infinite, you know, and by the time you want to add those 8 servers or whatever, you might end up having to get another chassis. You might not have been able to populate the one that you had, that sort of thing.
I have to play devil's advocate then, because when you start to get into the chassis conversation, you look and see that the chassis itself is just really a box for the servers to go into. What's going to change is going to be the modular component, such as the switches and the power supplies. Those are the items that are going to change as technology advances, you know, as we move into 40 gig Ethernet and as we get more efficient power supplies. Those components will change, but the chassis itself, which in all reality makes up a small fraction of an investment into blade technology, probably won't change over a 5 to 10 year period. In fact, there are customers out there who have the original Blade Center from IBM that came out in 2001, and it still runs their technology fine.
You know, and are they not paying a price for that then? From a functionality perspective, do they not wish that they were on the latest version? Are they not missing out?
They can still, with some exceptions, and I'm using IBM simply because they were the first, not necessarily the first on the market, but they're the ones who have been in the market the longest with the same product. When you look at the design aspect, it does give you the capability of putting in newer components into the older design. Now, as you move forward, there does become stipulations on the use of what type of products you can put in on the older chassis, and that becomes a power constraint. So there's some caveats that really can't be spelled out specifically because relative to the individual products by the vendors, but my point is that the chassis shouldn't really be a focus of holding back people from looking into blade technologies. In fact, it should be a consideration for blade technology because it is one of the components that doesn't change that much.
See, I kind of struggle with the idea that you can have a technology from 2001 that is still relevant and isn't hamstringing you today, 10 years later. I mean, I get the heebie-jeebies about the HP, the C7000. That's been around for a long time. They're going to end of life it soon, right? But am I wrong?
Yeah, you are wrong in the fact that the I'll just say it like it is. Yes, you're wrong. When you look at the roadmap, specifically for the C7000 from HP, it shows an end of life right now as of 2013. That is simply because they had to put a roadmap end of life down. What I have seen is over the years, the end of life scale continues to move because really if the design is functional and the design is modular like the blade vendors advertise, then you should be able to take out the components that matter, the switching fabrics, the power supplies, and I mentioned both before earlier. Those are really the two key components that really help glue a blade fabric together, because without that, all you have are a bunch of rack servers that are turned upside down, like books.
But can the backplane keep up? I mean, I might have been burned being predominant in the storage industry, but, you know, I've had brocade chassis that have not really lasted anywhere near as long as what you're suggesting about server chassis. You know, the story has always been to put in the latest and greatest 4-gig fiber channel, 8-gig fiber channel. Oh, if you want 16-gig, well, you know, for the backplane to be able to keep up, you're going to need a new chassis.
That is a great question, and from all of the architects and engineers that I've talked to from Dell and IBM and HP, they've all stated that their existing platform will be able to handle at least the next generation of Ethernet. And I would have to imagine that would be the 40 gig Ethernet that is being discussed. Not fiber channel over token ring, but the 40 gig but 40 gig Ethernet, which I think when we get to that point, then yes, that there will probably be discussions around, okay, now here comes generation 2 of vendors, you know, name your vendor's chassis, so that it can support whatever the next evolution of technology comes. But yeah, it's a gray area. There's really not a black and white. It really looks at what is coming, and they say, you know, we're good for the next 3 or 4 years. So,
well, the question I have, though, is, and I appreciate that the chassis can somewhat future-proof itself at least one generation, but where I get concerned is the management options, and specifically on the blade system, the blade centers. I had used that very model, actually, back in the day. That was one of the two blade platforms I had worked with. And I really didn't care for the web interface. And I know that you can update the firmware and take it a little bit farther, but that's my only concern, because I think that the management software options are going to be moving faster than the hardware chassis.
And that's a valid point as well. The first generation of web interfaces for chassis management were very poorly, I wouldn't say written, but just poorly designed. I think when you start to compare management interfaces from IBM and HP and Dell and Cisco, you start to see, okay, yes, there are certain interfaces like HP's design that makes it very easy to utilize. It's very graphical in nature, and it gives you that feeling of you're actually looking at the product and you're managing the product. And when you get into the Cisco design, the Cisco interface allows you to look at the servers and all of the components as objects, and it gives you that granular management capability that you need. So it's come a long way from that initial web interface that we saw in the early to mid-2000s, and is becoming more functional, and we're seeing that. And the good thing about it is, because it is software-based, it's just firmware. And so as these vendors come up with better firmware designs and better interfaces, it's just an update to your management module. It's not going to be a multi-$1,000 investment.
Hey, Kevin, I've got a question for you. Thinking about, well, we're talking about chassis here, the whole idea, one of the things that sticks in my mind is that, you know, I'm always trying to remove complexity from my environment, remove dependencies, loosely couple services and things like that, and now all of a sudden my servers have another layer in between them and the base infrastructure, between their power and cooling and all that stuff. What's the reliability of the chassis like? Like, if I'm going to cram 14 different blades into one of these things, you know, like, are they pretty reliable? Or, you know, what sort of options do I have? Because, I can just see failure taking out a whole bunch of my servers, as opposed to a power supply problem in one server just affecting one server.
Bob, you sound like you've had a horror story with blades. Have you?
No, I guess I don't have any specific big horror stories, just some little ones. And, you know, it might just be, you know, blades have come quite a ways since the last time I really looked at them. Like, I think some of the same problems are still there, but vendors may have mitigated them a bit.
You're absolutely right, Bob. And I guess when it comes down, and I'll answer your question in just a second, but from my viewpoint, when a customer asks me, which do I need, blades or servers? My answer is not always blades. I don't think that you can blade everything. My answer really is, well, tell me about your environment. Tell me about your situation. Because there are environments where I personally don't think that blades work well. One of the areas is what Rick mentioned earlier. If you don't have any space constraints, why would you really focus on blades? There's a management aspect that blades add, which I'll touch on in a little while, but from a perspective of just sheer density, if you've got the space, blades probably aren't the best fit. But if you are trying to do like you're doing and separate different components and keep them away from each other or keep them divided to the point of where you don't have to worry about one failure affecting a lot of boxes, then that may be another area of where blades don't work for you. But to answer your question, when it comes to reliability, the blade vendors have worked very hard in designing their chassis to be extremely resilient and to be redundant in nature. I won't specifically go into the pros and cons of each chassis, because that would take a two-hour show, and I don't believe we have that long, nor do you want to hear me speak for that long. But at a high level, they all build in redundancy from a power supply perspective. So if somebody comes down and pops out an entire PDU within a rack, there's a secondary PDU and a secondary power path that's providing the resources for those blade servers.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but like, for the other components, like the modules that you end up putting in here, like, can you have multiple network
absolutely.
Switches?
Absolutely.
That's
yeah, absolutely. When you get into the sheer design of all blade infrastructures that are typically in enterprise or in data center environments, they have redundant pathways and redundant switching built in. I don't know if you've ever looked at a chassis, but often you'll see anywhere from 4 to 8 I/O module bays. And you may sit there and go, why? I don't need that many I/O bays.
These are the things that generally sit on the back, right, behind where the blades plug in. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when we're talking about I/O modules, we're talking about the component that really is the gateway for the blades to have their data and storage communications to get outside the box.
And are these very Gen 1 at the moment, or are these mature? Should we expect to see a lot of change in the kind of I/O modules we see there in the future?
The I/O modules are very mature because over time, the only thing that's really changed is the form factor. So I'll use Cisco just as an example, because Cisco switches for blade chassis have been created since the early 2000s when IBM came out with the Blade Center. The Cisco module that Cisco designed then has the same guts as the module that they made for HP, and then later the module they made for Dell. And that's kind of the beauty of it, is that these OEMs, the Brocades, the Qlogics, the Ciscos, the Blade Networks technology, all of these vendors who are designing I/O modules to go into blade chassis, once they come up with the design that they need, all they have to do is fit it into the proper form factor, the proper connections.
So who owns these things then in an enterprise organization? Who owns... Does the SAN team own part of the chassis? Does the network team? Does the server team?
Yeah, you have touched on the biggest issue that I see within an enterprise. You have this design, and it's very similar to what we see in virtualization as well.
Oh, yes, definitely.
But you have this product that is a networking product, a storage product, a server product, an application, a virtualization device. And when you have all these entities, who is responsible? And that's part of some of the bottlenecks of introducing blades into an environment. And sometimes, as Bob was saying, it may be just simpler to have racks or rack servers, because when you have a rack server in there, you can say, I'm not touching the network. I'm not touching the storage. All I'm doing is sliding this box of CPU and memory in. And sometimes that is the best for an environment. But
often it's not the best for the environment.
Well,
people,
true.
Yeah, just don't want to deal with it, you know.
True. I take that back. It's more of sometimes it's best for that customer's environment in the only way that they're going to progress within their project. But to circle back to Bob's question about the network switching, any of the components that you'll find within a blade infrastructure or a blade chassis, they do have redundant pathways. So you're absolutely right. You do want to make sure that there's no single point of failure. And I guess in the big reality of it, the biggest single point of failure for any blade environment is going to be the chassis midplane itself. Because even if a blade vendor says, oh, we have separate pathways, an upper and a lower path, that's great. What if the lower path goes out? You still got to take the entire chassis down to service that guy.
So, Kevin, can I let me just summarize a couple of things, right? So the first thing we talked about was the chassis. You know, should we be worried that there'll be end of life, and is that a problem? And you seem to think that that is not the case. Second point being, you know what, if we're going to be deploying blade servers for any customers or in any environment, really what you're saying is we need to be deploying at least 2 chassis. If we're going to be deploying into a live production environment where we don't want any chance of taking an outage, minimum 2 chassis, yeah?
To be honest, when you look at the failure rates, from what I've heard from, again, different vendors, the failure rates are very low.
But Sod's Law says it's going to be you, right?
Yeah, I agree with where you're going here. You know, like if you have to take the whole thing apart in order to service an individual component, a crucial component in the middle of it, yeah, you know, you're going to need to spread your workload between 2 of them.
Yeah, I don't know that I could sleep at night recommending to a customer or recommending to an organization that I work for that we didn't have at least 2 chassis.
Well, hold on. It's not necessarily like a chassis on shelf, right? You're talking 2 chassis, let's just say halfway full. So think about, you know, you still have your expansion options.
Okay.
So you don't necessarily have throwaway upfront investment.
So how much of an upfront cost then is the chassis? Or do, I mean, you know, I don't really want to talk too much about cost because, hey, everybody gets freebies and huge discounts and things. But for the average Joe customer, buying two chassis, is that a significant cost increase for them?
I don't think that the chassis would be significant. I think it comes back to the I/O module, because within a blade architecture, if you introduce switching into the chassis, in other words, if you have I/O modules in the chassis that are designed to consolidate your communication, those are going to be the cost of switches. I mean, there's just no way around that. So that's really where your additional costs come from.
And what about space as well then? So if we're going to deploy two chassis, let's be honest, these things take up quite a few rack units. Do we want them in separate racks as well?
That's a great question. I mean, where do you draw the line within your redundancy? Because if you put them two in the same rack and you lose power to that rack, boom, you know, now your rack's a single point of failure. If you put them in two racks, do you have dual power feeds? Are those power feeds on separate grids? Do you have them attached to separate storage arrays? Do you have them attached to different cores within your network infrastructure? You know, where are you going to draw the line on how redundant you get?
And I guess that's different for each customer, right?
Well, yeah, you definitely extend the domains of failure as far out as you can afford. So, you know, do more left-right than up-down, simply speaking.
Yeah.
But that's how much you can afford, like you say, isn't it, which is going to be different for each customer.
Absolutely.
Something that you said, Kevin, that, you know, if you're not space-constrained earlier on, you said, maybe blades are not for you, which just to me thought, here's a guy who knows shed load about blades, suggesting that the sweet spot for blades is when you're space constrained. So let me just throw the question out to Bob and to you as well, Rick. You guys tend to lean a little bit more towards the rack mount servers. What are your reasons for that, and are there particular use cases?
Well, we've already talked a lot about the chassis itself. You know, that adds a layer of things. I think it can be bad. Certainly the levels of redundancy and all that, you have to be prepared for what you're getting into. Otherwise, thinking about the blades themselves, typically they can't be as large as a standalone server could be. Looking at the Dell stuff, I'm quite familiar with Dell servers in particular. Like an R910 can have 2 terabytes of RAM in it, for example. It costs a ton, but you know, we don't have any blades that can have that much in them yet. I think as RAM density gets there, that'll help.
Let me just ask a question there, Bob. When it comes to RAM, okay, so, and I don't know if this is an urban myth anymore, are blade servers and rack mount servers, or have blade servers reached a level playing field when it comes to RAM with their rack mount counterparts, or can you still get a lot more RAM in a rack mount server?
You can still get a lot more RAM in a rack mount server, mainly because of the larger capacity DIMMs take up more space, you know, are taller. There's more flexibility in that regard in a rack mount server. And some of these blade servers that you pull out, you know, it's all DIMM sockets. When you look at it and it's like, holy crap, there's like a ton of DIMM sockets on there. That's how they're achieving reasonable, well, I say reasonable, but yeah, larger amounts of RAM. You know, I'm kind of the school, because I do a lot of virtualization, and I've sort of subscribed to the school of thought where fewer larger machines as opposed to more smaller machines fewer larger machines is easier to manage and more cost effective. Right. And blades to me sort of seem like it's a collection of smaller machines, you know, and for virtualization, you know, that's another one of the things I was going to mention. Blades just can't get as large. But I do think that, well, they can't get as large, and also, you know, you can't have as much local storage on them, for example. You know, you're limited to 1-2 drives, something like that. I'm sure Kevin can clarify if there's more options or whatever, but if you need a lot of local storage, and, you know, and with virtualization and that, who cares about local storage anymore? we're all going to SAN-based stuff, iSCSI, you know, and I think some of the I/O modules, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but there are InfiniBand options now for most of these blade chassis, right?
Oh, yeah, and InfiniBand has actually been around for about the past 5 years. That actually is where there's a huge market is in the high-performance computing, where InfiniBand is really key.
Well, and then tying something like one of the Seago I/O directors or to it, you know, actually could help a lot of this as well. You kind of get the best of both worlds. You know, you've got chassis, you know, server density and better cable management and all that stuff coming along, but you also have virtual I.O. and that's all being handled outside of the box, so that might be an option too.
So just while we were talking about RAM earlier, let me circle back just to a quick question that I had. We're saying that, you know, in general, rack mounts can give you more RAM than a blade server can. Is it true, and I know you guys play a lot in the virtualization spaces, is it true that ESX or ESXi now generally still runs out of RAM before it runs out of CPU?
If you had to make a blanket statement, people are generally more memory constrained than processor.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you'd probably say they're more storage constrained first.
Okay, but storage aside, between RAM and CPU, my gut feel is you generally...
I run out of RAM well before I run out of CPU.
Yeah. So do blades make that worse then? Do they exacerbate that problem in a VMware environment?
In my opinion, their size limits you a little bit.
When you get into the argument of, hey, I'm running out of memory before CPUs, then it comes... The blades start to make more sense, and because vendors are coming out with kind of modular designs now, specifically thinking about IBM's HX5, you have the ability to either add additional memory blade next to it, or you can add additional processor. However, most cases, as we just said, you're going to need more memory. So when you snap on that additional memory, you've increased your memory slots by, I think, 16 slots. So you can add that memory without having to add another host into your environment, which is the traditional way that people have added memory to an ESX farm. So by not having to put in another host, that means you're not putting in two additional sockets, which means you're not putting in two additional VMware licenses. Now, whereas I know the VMware teams and the people selling VMware licenses are sad to hear that, the customers listening to the podcast will probably appreciate that, knowing that yes, there are blades that give you that capability of adding additional memory. The Dell M910, they use something that's called a flex mem bridge, and that, instead of using sockets 3 and 4 on their 4-socket blade, they put a bridge in there, and that bridge allows sockets 1 and 2 to access the memory that would be used by 3 and 4.
Oh, wow.
So, sweet. Again, it gives you the full access of that memory when you need it, instead of buying another host or buying another box to put into the environment. Now, I have to circle back, since I've got the speaker here, or got the microphone, I want to circle back to the comment about you can get more memory in a 42U rack with rack servers than you can blade. Because believe it or not, I've got a spreadsheet. I've designed a spreadsheet.
You're introducing facts to this discussion? Come on.
Yeah, we don't do that.
If we want to stay technical, I'm going to throw some good tech numbers here for you. When you start looking at blade servers, if I used I'm going to pick HP's BL460, just for the sake, it's on the screen right now. I can put 384 gigs of memory in that box. Well, if I put 4 chassis that are 10U high, that means I could throw in 64 blade servers. That 64 blade servers maxed out would give me 24 terabytes of memory within a 42U rack. Now, if we use Bob's argument with the R910 from Dell having 2 terabytes, I believe that box is a 4U tall box. Which means I can fit 10 of those in there. 10 times 2, that's 20 terabytes. I just beat you on the maximum memory.
But yeah, and you're probably also winning in total price as well. You know, I don't know. How many DIMM sockets does the BL460 have, though?
You're going to have 12 on the BL460. And there's certain models that have 18, but it's just a...
So, but that's still using the 32 gig, the expensive 32 gig DIMMs and stuff like that. So, okay, yeah, maybe you aren't winning on the price front.
Yeah, but Kevin, as well, does your spreadsheet tell us how many or what the ratio of RAM to CPUs is there?
Well, the RAM to CPUs is still going to be a 2-socket. So for where you're getting the maximum amount of memory, it's going to be a 2-socket Intel Westmere or 5600 design. So it'll come down to core. So you're getting like 12 cores to 384 gigs of memory. So the core to memory aspect is probably, let's see, 2 to 1 or something. I don't know. I stink at math. That's why I have a spreadsheet.
I think we're about to cause a car crash here as well. So
well, here let's also throw out another thing. This is a good discussion of scale out versus scale up. And Bob, I don't know for sure, but I'm going to bet that you are a 4-socket host type of guy.
Yes and no, actually. Yeah, I have been. Actually, my favorite lately has been the Dell R810, the 2U 4-socket box.
Sweet.
Running that FlexMem bridge that Kevin was talking about with the Intel X6550 CPUs that can only be two-way, but I can get two more cores instead of, well, ignoring the new 10-core stuff. The last purchase that I made, I spec'd each box out with two of the X6550s. They've each got 8 cores, so I've got 16 cores in each box and then 256 gigs of RAM, and that was a really nice price point. And CPU to RAM ratio, you know, like where my boxes are now running 50-60% CPU with total memory utilization. And that's kind of the ratio that I like. For me, yeah, the bigger boxes are nice, but also get a way in there. Kevin was talking about VMware licensing. That's, you know, often it's cheaper rather than to add a box just to replace one of your older boxes with a newer box.
Yeah.
You know? And because now you can get, in a 4-socket box, you can get 40 cores now from Intel. That's a lot, you know, and you can get all more RAM. You can do all of that sort of stuff. So this whole big thing is it's a very large set of variables.
I almost think that the CPU socket count question needs to be answered, you know, do you want to go 2 or do you want to go 4 before you think about your form factor? Because, you correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, there's currently not 4 socket blades out there.
Oh, yeah. I can get 8 sockets.
Hey, now.
Oh, who's doing 8 sockets?
It's IBM's HX5.
So how many of those can I get in one of their blade centers?
Well, that's where you start to come down to it, right? So as you start to expand with these add-on blades, then you run into, okay, now you're decreasing the capacity that the chassis can hold. And to Bob's point, though, the reality is if you have an 8-socket need, blade's not going to be the way to go. That's where you want to look at a hefty a DL980, yeah, something that's got that capability, or R910 or a 36 or a 3890. But to me, it's not only the sockets that you have to ask about, but it's, you know, what are you doing with it? Because does it make sense to run the Westmere EX for virtualization? Or would the Xeon 5600s be a better fit? You know, because that's kind of like, you know, database engine versus typical workhorse engine from a CPU perspective. And so, and there's always a price premium when you get into the 4-socket architecture with Intel.
Oh, yeah. The chassis taxes, I've been calling it.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So. Hey, so in the lab that we've got some C-class enclosures in a rack just next to some of our racks. I start noticing that they've got some pretty chunky blades in there now. And do we get to a point where we stop calling them blades? Do we need another name for them? Because some of these guys are pretty chubby that they're putting in there now.
Well, so you're starting to touch on a subject here of where you're seeing a crossover of the rack server and the blade server. And that's in the scalable servers that you're starting to see, or cloud servers, as they're also being called. And that's where these vendors are creating 2U high chassis, for the most part, where you can stick servers in that have 2 nodes on them, or 4 nodes on them. And each of those nodes are their own freestanding server. It's just they share a single power supply. So now, when I mention that, it's like, well, it sounds like you just described a blade server. Yeah, it really does. The difference is that it's a smaller footprint, and you don't have a centralized management point for everything.
Okay.
And they're not sharing I/O modules. They each have their own PCI Express slots and things like that. So it's an interesting time of where, as technology advances and we're getting so much horsepower on a single CPU and we're able to squeeze more memory within a small footprint, that we're going to start seeing these crossover blended environments. And, you know, who knows, the term blade server may go away one day.
You make me think of something interesting there then. I mean, as far as research and development goes for vendors, are we seeing more R&D being plowed into blade servers and less into rack? If that's true, should we take from that, well, all the cool stuff's going to come from blades in the future and we're being forced down a blade route and, you know, maybe the rack mount might never, you know, we're never going to see the end of rack mounts. I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I can't see either of them dying out. Like Kevin has been talking about, you know, there's really good uses for blades in some environments. There's really good uses for rack mounts in some environments. But, you know, probably also right next to each other in some cases.
But if a vendor could cut costs, right, by reusing components across the board, and by not having to R&D and develop two product lines, surely they would look to do that in today's economy, right?
Well, they do it with the tower models, I think, first.
Hey! So blades versus racks, four standing tower servers, that's the future. Yeah.
Who's going to buy them?
Well, and that's, I think Rick's got the point that maybe the first place to look is actually consolidation between the towers and the rack mounts, you know, like all the same components. You know, Dell has been doing that for a long time, where truly a tower server is actually just one of the rack mounts kind of stood on its end.
Yeah.
And, but looking into my crystal ball, you know, there's not... I really don't see there's so much benefit to a rack mount in certain situations, so much benefit to a blade in certain situations. Personally, I think a lot of the power savings that we're starting to see, a lot of the power crunch that people are in, is going to benefit blade servers more, because you know you're going to be able to cram more things in a certain amount of space with power caps and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's going to benefit everyone, you know.
But Bob, a lot of the data centers that I've been around, and this may be less so the case now, you used to see 42U racks that had like two blade chassis in them, and half the rack was empty because they couldn't provide enough power. They didn't have the kilowatts per rack or per floor tile.
Well, the density comes at a price. Well, yeah, I think so. The density comes at a price. You know, an Intel CPU is going to consume X amount of power regardless of whether it's in a blade or in a rack mount. And so being able to get that density, you need all of your infrastructure to be able to support it. And not just the networking, not just the storage, but also the power, the cooling, and all that stuff. So, yeah, no, I've seen a number of blade instances where blade center is the only thing in the rack. And it's like,
Looks a bit weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, and
I totally agree with Bob. And I mean, what I'm seeing is that all of the vendors are working hard to come up with more efficient power supplies. And by efficiency, I mean it puts off less heat. You know, it converts the DC to AC that can be used in the chassis more efficiently, so less heat's given off, which means less cooling is required. And so your overall power consumption is going to be reduced. But as technology continues to evolve and as Intel keeps cranking out these massive chipsets, yeah, it's going to be challenging to get away from having to supply these blade chassis with large amounts of power. I mean, the original messaging of blade servers were, if you're running out of power, use blade servers. Is it true today? Maybe not. There are ways to get your blade environments down, i.e. using the lower wattage CPUs, using lower wattage DEMs, using power capping on your blade chassis. You know, things like that will help you create a blade infrastructure that will fit within your thermal window or your power envelope or whatever terminology you want to use. But I think from the grand scheme of things, you got to remember, you're putting anywhere from 14 to 16 servers into a chassis. If you do that with 1 or 2 U boxes, what type of power are you going to require? You're going to require a large amount of power. So when you really look at it side by side, you're going to find that the bladed infrastructure is equal to or can be less power overall in a 42U rack than you would having a rack full of 2U type servers.
Generally today, do they like consume two L530P 30 amp twist lock power sources? Is that like the normal feed for a chassis?
Well, it really depends on the vendor. I typically see anywhere from 30 to 60 amp, and again, it depends on the vendor, and it depends on the configuration. But I think if for the people listening, if you say, okay, we're moving toward blades, what type of power do we need to plan for? I would say, as a safe way of planning, put 2 60 amp circuits in for each chassis. And again, that's the high level planning. In other words, you won't ever run out of power for that chassis. Again, the power planning is really a sticky part of any server design that often gets overlooked until the last minute. Often after the PO has been sent to the to the partner,
and then you ask your facilities guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, we're out of circuits in the room. Okay, and that's what I'm afraid of.
About the same sort of thing, you know. Whoever tells the networking guy, well, the data center guy's even left out even more. You know?
Sure, but I'm pretty sure I heard Kevin say if you supply 260 amp feeds, then you're never going to run out of power. So I'm going to hold him to that.
Oh no! Never say never. Never say never.
Hey, we're recording this. I've got it. Now, just in the interest of time, guys, before we wrap up, I've got one or two questions buzzing around in my head on a topic we had earlier. Just in general, do we think or do we know whether vendors tend to ship more blades or more rack mounts these days? Are the dynamics there changing?
According to the IDC numbers that came out last week, the blade servers represent 15% of all worldwide server sales. So it's still a very small fraction of servers.
Isn't it?
It's definitely growing, but it's not going to overtake the marketplace where nobody's buying rack servers. And to me, that says that where are the vendors going to be spending their R&D? Well, I don't think they're going to be spending it all on blades. I think they'll probably stay focused on innovating in the rack space.
Yeah,
while, you know.
But which yields the highest margins for the vendor? Do blades have a higher margin?
I wouldn't say that. It's a very tight marketplace right now, especially as you know Cisco released their numbers. Cisco's in the game. I think blades are a very competitive market right now, and I don't know. I haven't been privy to know where the margins are better, whether it's rack or blades. But I would have to say, based on the competition, there's probably better margins in the rack servers.
So, Bob, if you could change one thing about blade servers and blade architectures that would maybe win you over from being slightly more leaning towards the rack mounts, what would that one killer change be?
Well, perhaps, you know, there's not a whole lot of standardization between rack mount chassis. Perhaps some standardization between them so more vendors could participate in module design, things like that, where you could actually start driving some of the things that would normally be appliances, drive firewalls, things like that, into the I/O bays on these things. I think that would be really cool. That and management.
Is there any area of enterprise IT where we don't want the vendors to do a better job with management? I don't think there is there?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Management, by and large, really stinks all the way around. Yeah.
Why is that? That grinds on
me. It's an afterthought. It's an absolute afterthought.
To me, a solution is not fully enterprise until you can manage it at scale. Kevin, there's one killer feature that could come to either blades or rack mounts that would just really switch things up a gear. In your mind, what would that be?
I think it would have to be more of a global shared solution. You know, because right now we talked about how we have individual chassis and put blade servers in the chassis. But what if we had a 42U rack that had multiple connection points that gave you a bladed type of approach to where you could simply slide in your rack servers or your 2U servers. And once they connected, then you'd have one shared management platform that could manage that entire rack. And it would have connectivity to your entire network and storage environment. Take what we know as a blade today or a chassis today and take it 42U high. That's what would make me excited.
So we come around a full circle there. That then makes it a floor-standing tower, right?
It does. That's terrible. Yes, but that's exactly what it is. Yeah, but that would be really cool. Actually, you know, like it's just a 42U rack. You know, just a 42U chassis. And you know, if you could couple it with kind of what I was saying, inter-vendor standardization, which I'm not gonna hold my breath for, but if we could do something like that, you know, that would be really cool.
What about you, Rick?
I'd make the chassis free.
Oh, cool! I like it.
Or at least bake it into the price of the blade.
Rick, I'll give you a chassis for free. But you got to pay for the switch. Again, the chassis is only a fraction of the price. So if you want a free chassis, come see me, and I'll work on getting you a free chassis. But you got to pay full price for the switches.
Okay, I want chassis and I/O modules free in all ports and features. Fully licensed. Make the incremental cost of each blade higher. That's what would make me happy, Nigel.
Cool, I like it. So for me, while we're talking about crazy things that would make it all better in the future, I'm surprised none of you said it, and I know... Okay, I know it's way out there and it's probably really stupid, but I would just love wireless. I just despise cabling.
Like wireless power or something like that?
There you go as well. Wireless power, wireless Ethernet, wireless everything, yeah? You know, most of the labs that I tend to get my hands on have rack mounts, And doesn't matter how well you cable those things, soon as you need to pull that one new server out, you're at risk of just dislodging every single cable of every single adjacent server. And it might look great, you know, when you're showing your boss around, but as soon as you come to perform some maintenance on it, it's like, oh,
advantage Blades.
There you go.
Definitely.
Cable once, and then you got your chassis ready to go. All you got to do is pop in the next server.
Yeah. So I just want to talk real quick about scale as we wrap things up, okay? Keeping it really simple, you know, any of you guys have a rule of thumb as to, you know what, if you're going to buy this amount of blades, suddenly they do start to become more cost-effective than rack-mount servers. Is there a general, you know, that we can throw out to our listeners that says, generally, if you're buying just this quantity of CPUs or of servers, blades are not for you, but once you hit this inflection point, then they do start to become more cost-effective. Is there anything that's a ballpark figure out there?
Yeah, I would have to say, if you're depends on the workload, but if you're just doing Ethernet-based activity, i.e. a couple of network adapters on each server, like a Citrix farm, then I would recommend around 4 blades is kind of the break-even point from a cost perspective.
But would that be spread across 2 chassis then for resiliency?
Well, not for me. Because for the Citrix farms,
in
that environment. But as you go into more robust environments, such as virtualization or database or any of that, I would say anywhere from 8 to 10 blade servers is kind of the break even point. Maybe even 12.
Okay,
really?
Cool. They're not a great use case for my garage for a long time.
No, I agree with Kevin's comments. You know, if I had a greenfield environment, yeah, I'd pump out blades. If I had, you know, a use case where I could get 2 chassis and put 3 or 4 in each, oh yeah, I'd do it. Just put them in different buildings. And
we're out of time. Let's just do a quick run around, remind us of blog sites and anything else that, you know, you want to tell us about yourself, whether you're on Twitter or anything like that. So Bob, let's go with you first.
So I'm Plankers, at Plankers on Twitter, PLANKERS, and I'm lonesysadmin.net, lonesysadmin.net. And thanks for having me on.
No, it's been great. Thanks for being on the show. Kevin?
You can find me on Twitter at Kevin_Houston, and that's H-O-U-S-T-O-N. And you can also visit my blog at bladesmadesimple.com. And thanks for having me.
No, pleasure. Rick?
The Twitter is at Rick Vanover, R-I-C-K-V-A-N-O-V-E-R, and the blog is rickatron.us.
Rickatron. My name is Nigel Poulton. I've been your host today along with Rick. My blog is nigelpoulton.com, and you can reach me on Twitter as well at Nigel Poulton. Thank you.